Hey guys, I'm back. Sorry I missed the last episode, but I was in Dallas hanging out with Robin Williams, Michael Jackson, Kobe Bryant, Dale Earnhardt Sr.
Don't forget him.
Dale Earnhardt Sr. Dale Earnhardt Jr. was there too. He's a good guy. Hal Holbrook, Ed Asner, Hank Aaron.
Oh, the stars were there.
All of the good celebrities that
faked all the non cabal celebs had risen from the grave and were doing the monster mash.
I like the idea that like that was the kickoff of the 9/11 project was killing Dale Earnhardt Sr. because he would have like he would have questioned the official story. Like,
that was the American version of how the Taliban or the
they assassinated the Northern Alliance guy.
Shah Massoud first.
Yeah,
do 9/11.
That was going to be the only guy, like the only real celebrity, like not branded left wing celebrity who would question 9/11.
Yeah. I do wonder why was Robin Williams not part of the cabal?
It seems like he's
a Hollywood sicko par excellence.
No. You've never seen the movie Patch Adams. He's about bringing smiles to people's faces. He's not
because like every
shit.
Time a celebrity kills themselves, the QAnon people are like,
that's true.
He must have been the most molested boy of all time.
Yeah. Or he faked his death so that he could show up at the Rolling Stones concert.
Yeah.
Oh, you know who else was there? Charles Grodin. Really nice guy.
Wow.
Says he's a fan of the show.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so sick. Well, I mean, I can't say it was as star-studded or exciting back here. Just the ugly, slow work of democracy sometimes disappoints you.
Do we have anything to say about the election yesterday?
I do. Ralph Northam's wife, are you happy with yourself, you fucking piece of shit? You no fun, loving bee's nest. If you had let your husband do the moonwalk at the Blackface concert, there would be a 1,000-year Kaiserreich of Democrats in Virginia.
They would have suspended the one-term rule. They would have let him run again.
It would have delighted the entire state and the nation. But no, you were thinking about what it would look like at your book club. And now, Terry McAuliffe has lost to basically himself. And
yes.
I really hope you're happy. Really hope you're soaking in the praise at home.
What did you call him? Glenn Otherkin?
Yeah, Glenn Blumpkin.
Yeah, Matt called him Glenn Otherkin.
Glenn Blumpkin.
he was the
Carlisle Group guy. You know, the rugged populists at the Carlisle Group.
Yeah, he did 9/11, but he didn't like doing it.
Yeah, he felt bad about it the whole time.
Yeah, Glenn Otherkin spent his victory party. It was in the still unused ball pit at the Tumblr convention from 2012.
Let's go. I know the Democrats are stinging from, you know, what many are interpreting as a rebuke of the Build Back Better agenda. But if you dig down into the numbers in the suburbs, I think you'll find that Floss Latino is still a huge success and is really going to be the building blocks for 2022. 2024 and the foreseeable future.
Guys, you know I'm literally a communist, right?
Yeah, of course.
But I think like Floss Latino might have been too much too soon. I think we might have like tried to push the electorate left like a little too hard with Floss Latino.
You know, unfortunately, the Republicans built up a lot of headwind, you know, and sort of negative media messaging around Floss Latino, and it turned off a lot of voters in the suburbs.
I think we're going to have to like be realistic and pivot and get what we can and launch mouthwash Scotch Irish.
I think with the power of the pen, perhaps Biden can issue an executive order giving Sensodyne subsidies to people with student loans, but he has signaled that he does not want to use executive orders that way. So it's tough action either way, whatever happens.
I mean, it's like it's always going to be an uphill battle when, you know, you're trying to get people to floss and take gingivitis and plaque seriously. And then the Republicans are out here just handing out candy. Did you guys notice that on Sunday night, Republicans in every county across the country were giving people candy for free?
Yeah. And you think back, you know, all those cartoons we loved of the toothpaste fighting the cavity gang. You know, this used to be a different Republicans used to. Like Ronald Reagan was a voice actor in those. This used to be a different country before it got so polarized.
So yeah, things are looking up for the Democrats. I mean, obviously, you got to be looking forward to 2024. I mean, I know I am, guys. Like, it's going to be
very excited.
It's going to be pretty lit. It's going to be pretty lit.
Cool.
It's going to be pretty cool. Was it Kamala and Buttigieg?
Oh, baby. Don't get me excited.
I mean, think like, Buttigieg is like, he's not stupid enough to be like, oh, yeah, I'll board this sinking ship. If it's down to those two, he's going to backdoor her. He's going to find a way to get her out of there or try to. Like, I mean, there's no Republican I think she can beat besides Josh Holloway, maybe. And even then, like, as an incumbent, no.
No, I'm looking forward to Trump getting back in.
He'd be crazy not to run again.
No, he's going to run again, and he's going to get the nomination, and then he's going to win. And then you'll have unified Republican control of government, control of probably two-thirds of state governments. The median voter or the median legislator will be Marjorie Taylor Greene. But every television late-night show is going to be like the host being whipped by Billy Porter and apologizing for being white. It'll be wonderful. It's just going to be Republicans getting more and more political power, liberals freaking out more and more in their control of media and trying to make everybody good people by making terrible entertainment and pissing everybody off in the process.
Yeah, I mean, like, this was interesting because so they, like, still won Nova suburbs, right?
Well, yeah.
But their idea was, okay, we really have to, like, juice turnout in Raytheon Acres to win the state.
Yeah, so they tried to scare them and be like, this guy's like Trump. It's Trump. He's back. Trump's back.
Well, specifically with that, they really tried to tie him to January 6th.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, I got to say, if that doesn't give you the overwhelming turnout and numbers in Nova that you need.
Yeah, it's cooked.
It's like, I think that's their only idea for the next, like, indefinite.
Yeah.
I do not see them having anything else but January 6th.
No.
And no one remembered, like, no one... Even the people that, like, care about that shit the most, they were just, like, voted kind of like in a normal off-year election. Like, that was the entire problem that they had.
Yeah, it didn't seem like the sort of, like, a trending blue sort of affluent suburbs or a durable coalition for the Democrats. Because, like, absent Trump, these people just want their property taxes low.
And they
want
to make sure their kids...
I mean, they're just going to, like, go back to voting.
And they
want to
make sure their kids don't feel sad at school about being white.
Well, I mean, that leaves the Democrats, like, their only move really is salt, right?
Yeah, right. And then, that's it. That's the move.
That's the move. And then
can someone explain salt to me?
It's a very crucial flavoring and preservative. In fact, it used to be used as currency for paying Roman soldiers. Thus, the phrase salary.
It's basically a tax cut to people who, like, pay high state taxes, and
it's a giveaway to, like, property owners on the coast, right?
Right. It's okay. to the top 5% income people. It's like a huge giveaway, especially to people like kind of in blue states. But so you do that, and that would be like Reagan tax cuts level of, like, revenue reduction. So that forecloses on the possibility of any of the stuff they've talked about doing, like, oh, if we got 60 seats, we could do all these Build Back Better items. Not anymore. Not with PAYGO. And so you're just going to keep passing the football every 4 to 8 years. You're going to hope that every 4 years there's a January 6th type incident that gets the suburbanites on your side again. And then to try to keep them after you get slaughtered in the absolute next election, you're going to try to do another tax cut for them specifically, because, like, black voters out, you're not doing anything for them. You're like, you're content with the amount you have, but you're not gonna go out of your way.
Yeah. And the funny thing about salt, though, is that it doesn't really even help them in the long run, because, as you said, it is mostly felt by high income earners in blue states, in states that have high state income taxes, and those people are already concentrated in the enclaves that are, thanks to the constitutional apportionment system, are less electorally meaningful than the big empty places where nobody gives a shit about what property taxes are in Prince George County. So you're not doing anything to change the slide away from being competitive in the necessary number of seats.
Yeah. Meanwhile, black millennials and black Gen Z just anemic.
Yeah.
Fucking anemic. Rural, forget about it. Like, might you might as well just not exist there if you're the Democrats. Yeah. So yeah, it is. If you are the suburbs, you are the hot potato that will be passed back and forth.
Well, as long as you're talking about things I don't give a shit about, let's move on from Virginia to think something I do give a shit about, New York City.
That's right. New era.
Look, New York, as always, I think, is sort of a shining city on the hill that's going to serve as an example for the rest of the country about how to do things right. We just had an election here. That's one I paid attention to. And I just want to talk briefly about what went down with Curtis Sliwa the other day. Really a textbook case of voter suppression. And I'm, as far as I know, I'm the only media outlet talking about this. This was covered by the New York Times. Says, Curtis Sliwa brought a special guest with him to vote on Tuesday, Gizmo, one of the 17 cats he lives with in a studio apartment. But Gizmo was denied entry to a polling site on Manhattan's Upper West Side. Felix, are you responsible for this? Did you block Gizmo from voting?
No. I was the opposite. I said I was part of the new Black Panthers party that ensures voting access.
Just a little bit more on Sliwa here. It says, more problems soon followed, and Mr. Sliwa openly quarreled with election officials, shouting, arrest me, when they asked him to take off a red jacket with his name on it, an apparent violation of electioneering rules. His ballot jammed in the scanning machine, and the machine had to be repaired. An election worker hurled an expletive at Mr. Sliwa while asking him to leave. They couldn't have been more hostile, Mr. Sliwa said, as he left the polling site at Frank McCourt High School more than an hour later and was reunited with Gizmo, who was being watched by a staffer. And then last night of the story, Mr. Sliwa, who was hit by a taxi on Friday, wore a sling on his arm. He said he was in pain from the accident, but that he was more concerned for city workers who were placed on unpaid leave this week for refusing to get vaccinated, an issue he has increasingly focused on during the final week of the campaign. Gentlemen, when it comes to New York City, I'm a one-issue voter, and that is Gizmo and all the gizmos in the city. Who's taking care of them? Are they allowed to vote? And just, I don't know, like, just everyone should have a couple gizmos in their house. Curtis Sliwa has 17 of them. So the choice for me was clear, but it does look like Eric Adams will be our next mayor. And to that end, I just want to share a brief anecdote that the New York Times passes along under the headline, what kind of mayor might Eric Adams be? No one seems to know. Well, here's a little preview. It says here, in a 2019 commencement address, Mr. Adams complained that a neighbor's dog kept befouling his yard. No matter how polite he was to the owner, no matter his standing as Brooklyn's borough president, then a pastor gave him an idea. Mr. Adams slipped on a hoodie and Timberland boots, rang the neighbor's doorbell, and reintroduced himself a little less politely, he said. After that, the dog stayed away. Let people know you are not the one to mess with, he advised a predominantly Black graduating class at Medgar-Evers College in Brooklyn. He closed with a prediction for those who said he would never be mayor. I'm going to put my hoodie on and I'm going to make it happen.
He will go door to door and disturb everyone that he talks to on route to victory.
That electoral prophecy might well hold up. The story does not. It was the pastor, Robert Waterman, who actually had the neighbor with the dog and the confrontation at the door. Both men said in interviews, Mr. Adams just liked how it sounded. It was a great story, I heard, he told the New York Times recently. I heard him preach, and I told him, I'm going to tell that story. This is what's known as the podcaster's gambit. he's now poised to become New York City's next mayor.
I read that whole article, and it's very funny because it's got a lot of great details, some amazing quotes. One where he like brags about how much tail he gets as borough president. But the funny thing about it to me is its framing, which is this guy is a wild card. He's everywhere. He's bebopping and scatting. Nobody, even his closest confidants, aren't sure how he's going to govern. It's like, give me a fucking break. Everyone knows what he's going to do.
Let me guess.
He's going to do what the cops and the fucking developers tell him to do. The only question is, which anime character does he give a key to the city? That's it.
A couple more details about Eric Adams. He says he is alternatively referred to himself as a pragmatic moderate and the original progressive. He claims to take bubble baths with roses and has said he would carry a handgun in church.
I am reminded of my favorite thing he said after he cinched the primary. Folks, you've never seen a mayor with swag like me.
And he's correct. That's,
it's like true. Yeah, I've Eric, I have never seen anyone like you.
He said that he was going to retire to the Golan Heights and then later said he was going to go to Baku, Azerbaijan.
Well, you can summer in Baku or winter. But yeah, he's I get it. Like, yeah, he's going to be a shitty mayor in the way that like probably most people in that primary were going to be. But I really think it's the intangibles that will make these two terms unforgettable. And I think it's going to be stuff like, you know, is he going to keep up the storyline of the son's house, saying that it's his house?
Is he going to keep into the city from New Jersey? That would be pretty funny. If
is he going to keep parking his car on the sidewalk?
Yeah, these reporters followed him on election night and he like drove on a sidewalk to get out of a traffic jam, which is like you might think that's bad. That is a neuroatypical driving technique. That is how neurodivergent people get out of traffic jams.
He's in GTA mode.
Yeah.
Go on the sidewalk, then steal the cop car.
I want to see, you know, he was already getting more clown than a circus as borough president, which is, that's not even a job most people know exists. I mean, I think I could probably tell most of the people in my building I'm borough president. They probably believe me.
100%.
But yeah, like as mayor, okay. I think someone's getting some tune. I don't think Eric Adams is Bugs Bunny, but I think he's getting some tune. It's about to look like Kingdom Hearts in City Hall with the amount of tune in there.
Under the big top.
They're renaming it Toontown.
Okay, getting big top. Toontown, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah, New York City is henceforth known as Toontown.
Yeah, I mean, I think women threw themselves at Bill de Blasio, but I think he was faithful with his wife. I think Rudy Giuliani, like Michael Bloomberg, he had to go to a special place to get a certain, I'm not going to say woman, maybe girl that he enjoys.
Michael Bloomberg only got tuned from DreamWorks moms.
Yeah. Giuliani just like cheated with women he met in like the Fox green room, I guess.
Or at a family reunion.
Like, stuff he did. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot his cousin. But like this will be the first like player in Gracie Manor in a while. And the best part is it's everyone's getting promoted because Bill de Blasio will be our next governor.
Mm-hmm. It's happening, folks.
Yep. Kathy Molecule, your days are numbered.
he's taking the DeBunglero train to Albany.
I don't see what's stopping the DeBunglero train. I just really don't. I mean, it's him or Letitia James, but I think the second that the DeBunglero gets on the ground in Western New York, this train's leaving the station.
Yeah, I mean the rocket ship's going straight to the moon. Sorry, I was just trying to just imagine what kind of tune Rudy Giuliani gets, and the only image I could have is like Daffy Duck when Bugs Bunny like breaks the fourth wall and draws him as like a fucking like some sort of like like four legged screwball creature, and then takes his bill away. You're despicable.
And I've never been so humiliated in all my life.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the first thing Eric Adams has to do is close our southern border to Virginians.
No, yeah, but, get them out.
Yeah, no, you can't come here. I don't care. Like whether you're mad at critical race theory or you want more of it, because we have everything here. We have every type of school. We have schools where kids are, you are graded on how much you cry about being white. And we have schools where you only read Johnny Tremaine, the main types of schools. And they're both types are the best in the nation. But you can't come here. Fuck you. This is for lifelong New Yorkers. That's right. People who have lived here since June of 2015 and hated it openly for 90% of that time.
But now you're a real New Yorker, though.
Yeah. Well, I got through the
New Yorker. Because you supported Gizmo at the polling place at Frank McCourt High School, where you live now.
Yes.
By the way, for anyone who wants to know, Felix lives in Frank McCourt High School.
That is, yes.
That's another kind of school they have here, is one where it can be classrooms are rented out to people who want to live there.
I mean, it's bigger than most people's apartments. I have all the electric outlets I could ever need. It was actually formerly a chemistry classroom, so I technically have one of the biggest kitchens in the city.
All right. Well, moving on from the election news, I got to talk about what is probably my favorite news story of the last week or so. Have you guys been following the saga regarding the Munger dorm at University of California, Santa Barbara? Just the phrase, yes. Munger dorm is it's like a cellar door for me. Munger dorm.
Do you think like anyone had the job? Because he was, for people who don't know, these are like a horrifyingly built, just like ADX Florence style dorms.
Yeah.
Built
like,
entirely.
The story is a Charles Munger is a 97-year-old billionaire who like
Warren
founded Berkshire Hathaway with Warren Buffett. And he's also sort of a bit of an architectural hobbyist. And he gave all this money to UC Santa Barbara, like with the proviso that they let him design the Munger dorm. Because, like, you know, they have sort of a student housing crisis on campus. They need more dorm room space. And this guy, Munger, came up with the Munger dorm that is, yeah, it's like a supermax prison for undergrads, basically. And I just like there's an interview with him now in the Santa Barbara Independent. Oh, wait, no. It's in the architectural record. So it says here, Charlie Munger, the 97-year-old billionaire who has been ridiculed for wanting to build a dormitory with thousands of windowless bedrooms at the University of California, Santa Barbara, came out swinging Monday morning. In a wide-ranging conversation with the Record, he called his opponents, including a respected architect who resigned from the advisory committee last week, idiots. He said that he expects the 4,500-room building to be copied all over the country. Every other college will be jealous, he asserted. Munger said he hadn't decided how much of the building's $1.2 billion cost he will cover, but he said that it will be the biggest gift he has ever made. So it says here, UCSB is experiencing a severe housing shortage and is being pressured by area residents to build new dormitories. So Munger's plan for an 11-story, 1.68 million square foot housing block was greeted with open arms by the university's chancellor, Henry Yang, who called it inspired and revolutionary. The building will have 9 identical residential floors, each divided into 8 houses, with each house further divided into 8 8-person suites. Rows and rows of identical 10-by-7-foot bedrooms give the building in plan about as much variety as a sheet of graph paper, and only about 6% of the rooms have windows.
Too many. Too many windows.
Get rid of them.
Yeah. I didn't know we were
Think
building
about all
Versailles
the space
here.
Being wasted. Yeah.
You're going to create a class system between the window people and the non-window people, put a completely sunproof shell around the entire thing.
It says, speaking from his home in Los Angeles, Hancock Park, which he designed himself and which he said has lots of windows, Munger said that he based the dorm's design on the Unité de Habitation in Marseille by Le Corbusier. But Munger said that the building was too narrow to make that space interesting, so the whole thing didn't work worth shit. I've fixed that. We took Corbusier's errors and the errors in university housing and eliminated them one by one. Munger doesn't suffer fools gladly. In his most recent letter to shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway, the company he runs with Warren Buffett, Munger wrote that the worst attributes of bureaucracy should much more often be treated like the cancers they so much resemble. In other words, my way or the highway. So, one of the architects on the design review committee at UCSB resigned after seeing the plans that they were about to go ahead with for the student housing. It says here, but Munger said of this guy, Dennis McFadden, he reacted with his gut like an idiot. He didn't look at the building intelligently. In particular, he said, McFadden didn't examine the models, which he said the chancellor would have happily shown him. Everybody who sees the models goes apeshit for them, Munger said. In response, McFadden wrote in an email that the floor plans of all levels and images of the digital models and renderings were sent to me in advance of the last meeting, as well as presented in the meeting by a representative of the design team. I understand the plans well and in detail. During the long phone interview, Munger said that with a large brood of children and grandchildren, he is intimately familiar with university housing. He spent years and years, he said, trying to improve on what he's seen. So, I mean, I think basically what's going on here is that Here's a 97-year-old billionaire who is sort of, you know, he's sort of pulling back on his day-to-day duties at Berkshire Hathaway. And, like, you know, when you get to that age, you want to have a little fun. And for him, fun is torturing roughly 6,000 college students.
Yeah, it's basically going to be Squid Game. He's going to, like, enroll as an undergrad to go to the Munger dorm. Just to enjoy it with all the other kids. Looking like Hans Moleman.
Cowabunga, dude. No, my God. Yeah, he's gonna get one of the fucking cells, yeah. And he's going to be in the matching jumpsuit. He's going to be student number one.
And you're, you know, because he has reasoning for this, and it's that he wants the kids to spend as little time in their dorms as possible. He wants them to circulate and he wants them to socialize. So I could just see him being like, hey kids, we're going to the rec room. We're going to play some Parcheesi.
I like red light, green light, 1, 2, 3.
Don't play too much bridge out there. I like any story with subtext, and this is brimming with it. A billionaire, after, you know, doing what Berkshire Hathaway does and nickel and diming everyone from the underclass all the way to sort of like the lower to regular middle class for its entire run, and then running out of people to do that to, and then finally getting to sort of middle class, upper middle class people and being like, hey, sorry, standard of living's going down. Fuck you. Yep.
Get in the pod.
Yeah.
Everybody get to the pod.
Just on your way out, like making this in your own time when you're like 98. Just be like, fuck you.
He's 97 years old.
Yeah. Fuck you. You have to go to college like you're Larry Hoover.
He says, describing the process of designing the UCSB building, he said, we took the penthouse space, which is what everybody wants, which is twice as valuable as ordinary space, and gave it to the students. I mean, that's very generous of him in designing a college dorm that he would give some of the fucking penthouse space to students. What was the alternative?
I mean, just places for him to personally live and watch them all through closed circuit cameras.
It's like Slipper. Yeah. He's like William Baldwin in Slipper. Exactly. It says here, that, of course, works like gangbusters. One of the penthouse amenities, he said, would be a Costco store. Munger has been a Costco director since 1997.
Okay. This is the best idea I've ever heard.
Felix is completely won over to this.
Okay. Idea. Okay. Think about it. Fuck college students. That's
it. No, good
fuck
point. Good
okay.
Point.
Yeah.
Hard to argue.
Yeah. I have no other argument.
He said there would also be a club for resident advisors and classrooms that will be converted into recreational spaces at night. No one has ever done that, he said, adding, it's all about the happiness of the students. We want to keep the suicide rate low. It's just like, I mean, he's just having
fun. He's having a good time.
He's in the having fun mode of his life, and he's just like, yeah. I'm trying to design a building that will look. The number one thing, we don't want college kids.
No, we do not want that
living in this maddening children are our future. Like fucking hellhole.
I like to think that he, on his desk, amongst all of his different iterations of this, he has like a theoretical concept that's like that death roller coaster where every student would kill themselves.
Yeah,
he's like, but we're not going to use that one. That would be too many. This is the optimal number of suicide. You can't have zero. That's just not feasible.
No.
But this is optimal amount. Minimal amount of lawsuits and haunting stories that kids tell themselves about ghosts wandering the halls.
I mean, should just like lean into making it Supermax. Like, it should be like, there should be no suicides because they take your shoelaces and your belt when you move in.
You got, instead of a mirror, you just have like a buffed piece of metal that you can look into.
To like study with people, you just pass kites during the like 10 minutes of rec time every day. And then if you're in a frat, that's like a white collar. That's like a Michael Cohen prison.
Yeah.
See, I think one of the benefits of these sort of closet style rooms is that, each one is, there are no windows, keep in mind, and each one is hermetically sealed off from the other and has a small reserve of sarin nerve gas that, if you would like to press the suicide button, is available to you. But ideally, like, they'll be so nice that you won't press the college suicide
button. You probably will
not
press the gas button and kill yourself.
No.
And everyone else in the cube.
The gas button is right next to the lights.
That is true.
It says here, there's a lot of really interesting, there's a lot of like nice color about Munger and the Hmong lifestyle. He says, after designing the two amenity floors, he says, we had to figure out how to house the students. It took a year. After I added the Costco to the building, of which I serve as on the board of directors, then we had to figure out what to do with all the people that it's supposed to, cram in there.
You can live in Costco.
You absolutely could.
And it's like fine.
And many, honestly, I think in the relatively near future, many people will.
Yeah.
But he says here,
I think you could have an amazing, like, if you were, I wish I was born in 2002. I wish I was spending my first year of college at the Hmong right now. Could you imagine?
You could be just munging it up with your fellow mole people.
Yeah. Okay. So you get back from your like white fragility / TV reviewing class. And you're like, oh, I need like a bunch of laundry detergent and some muffins. So you go to the Costco that's, by the way, in the lobby of the building you live in, and you have kind of a meet cute. Your cart rams into a, I don't know what haircuts girls have. Let's say side bangs are coming back. She has side bangs. Okay. And you're like, oh, you needed Costco's, banana nut muffins too? And before you know it, you are in the morgue slot you live in, P&V, getting your shit wet in the Hmong.
Getting tuned
in the Hmong. For the way that college students probably fuck now, which is probably like very lethargically when you consider reducing, you know, lowering sperm counts and testosterone.
Porn and everything, yeah.
You know, they're probably like, I mean, I don't really know what's going on, but I am assuming that they are starting SSRIs at younger and younger age. I'm assuming that the moment
did they come in a Flintstone chewable
she's pregnant.
Now. So yeah, I think so.
Oh, I think before that, I think the second there's a heartbeat and you want to have the kid, if you like are liberal or just whoever, you just take a needle and just inject Wellbutrin into your womb. I think that's what happens now. I'm not sure. Don't correct me if I'm wrong. So like for that style of sex, the Hmong is fine.
Yeah. You're not moving. You're barely moving at all.
Yeah. It's just like five slow pumps. You might as well just be soaking.
Yeah. I mean, like for me in college, it was always, you know, it's always the hardest part is how to get a girl to come back to your, to your resting tube. to the regeneration slot that I stand in between classes.
Okay, it goes on. Could you have gotten a chicken bake in between going to the prison from Demolition Man where you sleep? No, you couldn't.
Just a little bit more about Hmong here. He says, it took a year and a half for me to decide not to make more than one student sleep in the same room. Yeah, roommates. What? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I do not think so. That's the number one thing college kids complain about. Munger described the times in his life when he's had to share a room with unrelated strangers as, quote, awful. He even remembered sharing a sleeping bag with another Boy Scout, which we had to do to stay alive until morning, but which he hated. So he's...
I don't think you were in the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, that was something else.
I think the most evil man in your neighborhood did something very bad.
He's designing a living space based on his fear of like having to like stick his hands in the ass crack and armpits of a guy to avoid hypothermia. And he's like, I don't want anyone having to go through that experience again, no matter what.
You have to put on these Doc Martens and stomp on my ass or we'll both be killed.
Once he decided that every student should have a single room, he realized we had a window shortage. So we just copied what Disney Cruises did. The way Disney does it, the window is really a television set. Those work beautifully on the ships, but I wanted to have a spectrum of sunlight. So with a curtain hanging over it, you couldn't tell if it was artificial or real. I figured out how to do that. Programming the lights to copy the sun was too expensive. So we will give the students knobs, a and they can have whatever light they want. Real Windows don't do that.
That's true.
That's true. You have to just deal with whatever sun is going to give you at that moment. You don't get to customize your light experience.
Matt, do you remember the last time we toured London, the hotel we stayed in there had windows like that?
Yes.
Where they weren't windows, but they were just light panes that you could kind of dial in a sun amount?
I felt like I was in a submarine.
We stayed in those rooms for 2 nights, and after 48 hours, I felt like I was going insane.
Yeah.
Like waking up in pitch blackness and having to dial in artificial light to simulate light cell. I felt like I was in some 1950s experiment that you would do with a capuchin monkey.
Yes.
It was
now
crazy.
Real Harry Harlow hours.
It's not required, obviously. This is not the heavy hand of the administration saying, you can't have fun. It's not required, but it is highly recommended that before you move into the Hmong house, you start taking vitamin D supplements. Because, I mean, yes, you will have a dimmer, but that is the one thing that that windows do provide, or just the sun in general. He said he doesn't see a problem with windowless rooms. It's quite endurable, especially with good ventilation.
That's what you want to see on the Yelp review anywhere you go. Endurable.
I think you'll find that Jolly Roger is eminently endurable. he says, it's quite endurable, especially with good ventilation. Nobody minds going into a basement restroom and peeing because there's no window. Yeah, I don't mind peeing in a basement with no windows. I wouldn't like living there. I just love, he says, these are about people, this is where kids are going to live for a year. And he's just like, nobody minds pissing in a basement. Munger rejected the claim made by some critics of the building that it lacks adequate means of egress. I'm a nut about safety, he said. There are enough exits to satisfy all of the codes, and they're way bigger than normal. He added, it's a sprinklered concrete building. Do you know how much loss there has been to fire in the history of sprinklered concrete buildings? Approximately zero. Then he spoke in terms of how the concrete for the building will be made. In a factory under high pressure. So the building will last as long as the pyramids. You can't get that by pouring on site. In addition, he said, the extreme standardization will allow much of the building to be prefabricated, saving time and money. That is how they built the pyramids, by the way. Look, to save space, he's the nut about safety. So to save space, are there elevators or staircases in the building? No. There are no fire exits. There are no staircases. There aren't even elevators. But each room is connected to a pneumatic tube, which allows easy egress and access to multiple students, unless three or more of them use them at the same time. Then the body tubes get clogged. But it's a sprinkler building, so don't worry about fire.
You know, if you think about it, too, the pyramids had their own version of Costco in it. They buried the pharaoh with everything that you get during your monthly Costco run.
That's true. Holy shit.
That's very true. He said that each of the building's houses will be co-educational, which is going to, quote, enormously improve the behavior of the males. I just...
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when you put men in windowless closets for hours and hours of a day at a time, it tends to improve their behavior.
Men who behave badly will be given Nutriloaf.
Nobody's ever done all these things in one place. I expect these buildings to sprout up all over America. His goal, he said, was to make life better for students, not to draw attention to himself. He said he doesn't even care what the buildings are called. Munger Hall won't help me when I'm dead, but all of the souls he collects through the Munger slots will help him when he's dead. On his journey to the Western lands, when he is buried in a sarcophagus, all of the students in Munger Hall will be buried with him. He says here, Munger described architecture as a kind of a hobby, particularly now that he's spending less time in the office. I'm almost 98 years old. They don't need me at Berkshire Hathaway every hour of the day. Dude, they don't need you anywhere. Yeah, you shouldn't be allowed to do anything when you're 98.
All. You are unnecessary.
Stop contributing to the future. Just hang out. Just chill. Ugh. He says, Munger asked what he has learned from the UCSB design process, said, what I learned was how stupid I was. Imagine taking years to decide that the kids should get their own bedroom. And asked about the controversy that has ensued since McFadden's letter was made public, he said, I'm surprised by how little controversy there is. Architects never agree on anything. So, I mean, I like when he said that, like, I expect these buildings will be built all over America. He's not lying.
This is the future.
This is the solution to the housing crisis. As long as Berkshire Hathaway is in charge of it.
It's cube time. The cube moment is upon us. Surrender to the cube. I just like that he saw a documentary about the Stanford prison experiment and got the wrong idea. Like, what if you made the whole college out of the prison experiment?
That was like, I mean, honestly, if you were one of the prison guards, that was one of the highlights of your college experience.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, yeah, I got to beat the shit out of
some guy. It's fucking
fun. For not making his bed. And that's the other part of this is that, yeah, like the RAs are revolving amongst the students and they get guns.
The RAs are revolving among the students, but they will be doing the Milgram experiment to every one of their residents.
Shock collars.
There we go. No, Matt, you said earlier that he designed it on a submarine. I saw another news article that said that literally that. He said, we took the maximization of available space that shipbuilders use, and like, for instance, when the Navy builds a submarine, and applied that to a dorm that is not 3 miles underwater. Yep.
The job that you have to volunteer for because you have to be a freak to want to do it. And you're just going to cram all the undergrads in there.
But like, who wouldn't want to live in a submarine for 9 months out of the year? Think how fun it would be. All the amenities are so close by.
It's true.
What if there was like, maybe we should cut this out because this is like too good of an idea. But what if there was like a military submarine, but it was the weed smoking one?
Well, and that's basically
what the Hmong is. The Hmong is like U571 or Das Boot, but they're ripping legal buds in Cali.
U420.
Oh yeah.
Woo!
Yes.
There we go. Oh, and you know, like, I mean, like, I suppose that this isn't a problem now because there's no roommates. But you remember back in college, and you got a lady back in the dorm room, but you want to keep your roommate out of the room. You sort of like leave a sock or a tie on the door. I mean, even though there's no roommates, if you'd like it to make aware to the to the Costco guards that you're getting it in, you can just set your light meter to a certain level, and it would alert the people tubes that like that way like the people tube won't open in your room when you're getting it in.
Well, like dusk setting could mean like hand stuff, dawn that's mouth. And then broad, like daylight, that's sex.
Yeah.
Home base. Perfect. Man, I love college. Hey. I love drinking. Hey. I love women. Hey. Man, I love college. All right. So that's Hmong House. But I have another story that's equally as cool. Folks, you want to know what the next hot, cool thing is? I know we've talked about NFTs. I know we've talked about crypto. I know we've talked about, you know, sending GameStop to the moon and rescuing AMC theaters. The next cool thing, though, tungsten cubes.
We love the cubes, folks.
No, it's like we're going to live in cubes and we're going to like look at the cubes in the cubes.
It's the dawn.
Yeah. Dawn of the cubes.
Of the age of cubes.
So it says, they bought the Bitcoin dip. They took GameStop to the moon. Now the online investor army has a new favorite thing to buy and hold. Small tungsten cubes. This is courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. It says here, even in a year that has featured dog meme cryptocurrencies and rappers shilling S-packs, tungsten cubes stand out. They are as inert as they sound, gray, an inch or two on each side, and 1.7 times as dense as lead. A major selling point, according to Amazon.com's product page, is that they are extremely heavy for their size.
That's the main thing I look for in any
product.
That's
a selling point.
I mean, I'm listening.
Yeah, no. If something isn't dense, I'm not buying it.
I mean, think of the value. I mean, it looks small, but it's so dense that you're getting like
you're getting so much more cube for the dollar.
Getting so much more weight. Yeah.
Yeah. An equivalent cube made out of like cotton candy, you would be laughed out of the office.
A 2-inch cube of tungsten weighs the same as the entire Hmong dorm at UC Santa Barbara.
Wow. And then when they finally do phase 3 of the Hmong dorm and shrink the Hmong and the students in it, then that's just another cube you have on your desk.
You could fit all of the students at UC Santa Barbara in a tungsten cube that 1 foot in diameter. And they will be doing that.
Oh, 100%.
Thanks to Warren Buffett. It says here, that is also their main source of appeal to crypto bros and other enthusiasts who caused a run on supplies at a major tungsten provider in recent weeks. They are shelling out around $400 a piece for 2-inch cubes weighing around 5 pounds. Or $3,000 for the 4-inch version, as heavy as a low horsepower outboard motor and almost 3 times the price. While cube enthusiasts overlap with aficionados of ephemeral varieties of digital money prone to heart-stopping swings in values, their new paperweights, given their density, are almost the most tangible things on Earth. Tungsten has one of the highest tensile strengths and melting points among metals. Drew Morris, a 35-year-old Florida lawyer at a blockchain intelligence company, bought his 1.5-inch cube after friends came across it on Twitter and in Telegram group chats. He found the density mind-blowing. I keep it on my desk as a reminder of what motivates me. Keep going. Keep working, said Mr. Morris, who also invests in cryptocurrencies. One day, I'll be able to upgrade to a larger size cube. Oh, man. I feel fucking, I'd laugh if it wasn't so sad, but I feel pity for all these broke boys out there with small-ass cubes on their desks. I'm sitting on a tungsten cube right now.
Yeah, women are just like, they're not getting with cubeless men.
Nope. Cubists like Mr. Morris got recent inspiration from a niche corner of online life: financial Twitter. FinTwit, as it is called, typically consists of investors, small and large, debating the direction of markets, the prospects for inflation, and recipes for grilled meats. Lately, photos of smoked brisket have given away to pictures of cubes.
There's only so much meat you can smoke before you go, what am I doing? This is hollow. It's just this. There's, how much can I pay? How much money can I pay enough for fucking fake Wagyu? And then your mystification is lifted when you realize, oh, I could be caring about cubes. Something that has a real
value. That's what happened.
Something that's really meaningful.
That's what happened. Someone was like, your life is totally hollow. And then one of these guys was like, what's the opposite of hollow?
Density.
What's the densest thing I could buy?
You say that. There's a really good quote about that later in the piece. It says, hold on a sec. Nick Carter, founding partner at the blockchain-focused venture capital firm Castle Island Ventures, describes himself in his Twitter bio as the original tongue pillar. I'm density pilled. I'm based in density pilled. He said that the physical heft of the cubes contrasts with the intangible nature of crypto markets. We're just deprived of physical totems of our affection, so tungsten fills that hole in our hearts, he said.
Okay.
I just like to back up a second. He says, we're deprived of physical totems of our affection. Previously, that would have been described as spouses, partners, or children.
But even if you're just talking about, like, guys who are on their hustle and like focused on their money. Like, these guys' money is in a digital wallet somewhere. You can't put that on Instagram, but you can put a dope ass cube out there to show them how much, how like, see this cube? This symbolizes a bunch of Shiba Inu coins.
I love this. So tungsten fills that
fills
hole in
the
our
fucking
hearts.
Cube hole. Not, I mean, it's not. It's square. It is a square hole.
Oh, man. Imagine having a cube-shaped hole in your soul big enough that the only thing that will fill it is the densest metal on the planet.
Well, you know the other story about this, right? That there's a company that's going to – they're auctioning off the rights to a giant cube.
That will be got to in the article in a second. But just before we get there, it says, demand intensified after Niraj K. Agrawal, director of communications at Coin Center, a nonprofit cryptocurrency research and advocacy group, posted a joke mock-up of a faked Bloomberg news story claiming crypto traders were behind an imaginary global tungsten shortage. I'm going to be buried with my cube, probably, said Mr. Agrawal. It will be like a pharaoh buried with his possessions, so the cube will have a place of honor. And there is a photo that accompanies the piece of Mr. Agrawal staring at the cube on his kitchen counter. And he's looking very sort of ponderously at the cube that he has. Cube enthusiasts often describe them in quasi-mystical terms. you kind of start wondering about gravity and the forces of nature, and it can send you on an out-there wandering experience, said Rabbi Michael Karas, an Albany-based Jewish day school teacher who uses the Twitter handle The Bitcoin Rabbi. He owns a 1.5 Felix, stop fucking around with these alt accounts. You're tricking the fucking Wall Street Journal, man.
I do like that they are just like, you know, like the old joke of them like reinventing buses all the time. Yeah. Well, they're like, they're sort of backdooring their way into religion. You just like invented religion.
We just did that. They reverse engineered Stonehenge, but that's a bunch of boring ass stones. This is just one nice cube.
Stonehenge isn't even dense.
No, it's remarkably porous.
Yeah, that's why that religion isn't around anymore. The fastest growing religion in the world, guess what they worship?
The cube.
Guess what they walk around every year?
Yeah, these guys are on their, they're just speed running through like polytheistic like tribal religions, and they're already almost up to Islam. It's amazing. Like, that's the power of the blockchain. It's much more efficient.
Last time it took them like a few thousand years to invent Islam. This time, like, how long has like Silicon Valley been around? What, like 40, 50 years?
It's amazing.
Not bad.
The five cubes of Islam. He goes, it's kind of like a disconnect between what your eyes are seeing and what you're feeling and what you expect from something that fits in the palm of your hand, he said. There is a rallying cry. We like the cube. It's a play on the phrase, we like the stock, often used on sites such as Reddit's Wall Street Bets, to show support for buying shares of GameStop Corporation, AMC Holdings, or other meme stocks. We like the cube. We like the cube. We like the cube. Oh, and here we go, Matt. Midwest Tungsten recently launched an NFT of a 14-inch cube weighing almost 1,800 pounds. Buy an NFT, and you can visit the cube once a year. On social media, the company requested photos of the cubes in their new homes. Is it only a cube? The firm tweeted.
Okay, they've done it. They made Islam already. They have created the Hajj.
Yeah, that's pilgrimage.
They have created the fucking Hajj to the fucking Kaaba. They have done it.
But they're doing the Hajj. They're doing the Hajj in like Michigan,
where it always belonged. Honestly,
I mean, yeah, kind of.
Every year they. Every year, crypto traders make the Hajj to touch the cube. Yeah, they invented Islam again. He goes here, we have a pretty interesting fight going on internally. Whether or not someone is actually going to be able to pick that up, Mr. Matuszewski said. Midwest Tungsten also sells tungsten spheres.
Oh, get out of here. Fuck
get
off.
Get that shit out of here. Oh, my God.
Bullshit. Disgusting. Crap.
Yeah. The tungsten sphere would be funny because it, like, rolls off your kitchen counter and then just, like, falls through your foot into your basement because of how dense it is.
Yeah, just killing every pet in your house with your sphere.
It says here, Midwest Tungsten also sells tungsten spheres. Mr. Morris, the Florida lawyer, isn't much interested. We like the cube, he said. So... that's two stories about our exciting cube-based future.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready to eat cubes, collect them, live in one. It's all going to be good.
What would you do if you, like, on Christmas or the new winter cube holiday?
The cube solstice.
Like getting a cube solstice. What if instead of, you know, getting a new cube as you expected, your beloved, your spouse, got you a sphere? What would you do?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, I would immediately go on Reddit and share the story to Am I an Asshole?
I would
call a lawyer. Call a lawyer immediately. Oh, the cube solstice is going to be a great holiday, though, because you know what's the perfect shape for fitting down chimneys?
Cubes.
Cubes. Just, Father Cube goes, drops cubes down the chimney of all good boys and girls.
I have to say, like, you know, people are always saying things are getting worse and we're stuck and everything's like a shitty copy of a copy. Mm-hmm.
Like you keep saying that, yeah.
Yeah, but like the average density of objects is up so much since when we were
kids.
That's
huge. That's, yeah. People really take that for granted when they talk about social progress.
I remember the first cube I got as a kid. It like blew away in a strong wind. I never saw it again.
Fuck, you sucked.
I cried. How I cried.
Yeah. I was given a cube after 9/11, and wouldn't you just iron shit? Weighs about as much as you would expect looking at it. Crap.
The first time, the first time I put my cube through the washing machine, it was fucking done. It was ruined.
If you think about it, John D. Rockefeller was the richest man in the world, but the density of his cubes was probably like, I mean, just the average guy who you just, if you work at Costco now, you probably have cubes 10 times denser than anything Rockefeller.
1,000,000%.
Yep. I think there should be a way to buy a tungsten cube, like a fairly sizable tungsten cube that is held in orbit on some sort of like satellite platform. And then if you buy it, you can drop it on a location on the surface of the planet.
I was thinking about the guy who is getting buried with his cube. And what if like they like lower him into the ground using some type of military equipment because there's so many cubes in his tomb. And then he finally, the thing we always talked about in cartoons that no one ever did, you dig a hole in America and you pop out in China due to the strength of his cube. Someone in China.
Wait. Then China would have his cubes.
Oh, man. This is okay. We can't let him be buried with the cubes.
No. Got to keep the cubes in a secure location. You know, to cross the River Styx, it's often said that you would place two tungsten cubes over the eyes of a dead person when you bury them. So let's pay the ferryman. So there we go. Cubes. We like the cube. We like living in them, eating them, being them. You know, I mean, I think Alan Moore has said that reality, like, you know, time and space is a sort of four-dimensional cube. So there we go.
Everyone laughed at the time cube guy, but he was ahead of his time.
Well, we've got one last vision from the cube universe, and that is Ozzy.
Oh, hell yes.
Can we check in on how I mean, you know, a lot of people have been questioning what's the future of this company after they were recorded on video doing securities fraud to investors.
Of course, that coming after they named their company after the Shelley poem about the impermanence of all things and the folly of hubris, and go, yeah, but we're different. We're going to do it different. We're going to hustle our way out of that.
I think Carlos Watson said of the fact that they named their company after the Shelley poem is that he's like, yeah, like, you know, like when I saw two like vast limbless trunks in a desert land or whatever. Sorry, don't sue me. I can't remember it off the top of my head. He said that like, yeah, he's like, I read that poem and to me it's about like what's next.
Yeah.
You know? All right, Chris, play the Carlos Watson Ozzy video. This just dropped. People have questions about the future. This is, we're back, but we're different. Hashtag Ozzy, hashtag Ozzy Media, hashtag moving forward. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Ozzy's coming back, but one of the things I've been saying to the team is I don't think that we can just be the same that we've been before. I don't think we can just return to normal. I think that given everything that happened, somehow we have to turn this into an opportunity to reimagine what can be new and what can be valuable, what can be good. And I hope that we will come back, you know, with a generosity of spirit that's all about elevating conversations and elevating a community and actually building an even stronger community. Maybe now is an opportunity to really, you know, put our arms around each other and bring that alive. I hope that we actually become a really strong and creative community. Like, I'd be very proud if that's what Ozzy becomes, not just a media company, but a community, an activated community, a bold community, a global community, a colorful community of people who believe that something better is possible and that we all deserve something better and that we can be a part of that. And whether it's entertaining, whether it's informational, whether it's a gathering, that's what Ozzy will all be about. And I would love it if there's an opportunity years from now for people to talk about Ozzy's second chance and what Ozzy did with that second chance. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. If you have ideas about what you think we should do in order to truly be valuable to people, let us know. We're going to try hard.
I'd just like to notice here that the last 15 seconds of this video is just dead air.
Yeah, just a blank screen.
It's just a black screen.
Well, okay. Yeah. Maybe that's to give you time to think about ideas for what Ozzy should do.
So whether it's information, whether it's entertainment, whether it's a gathering.
It's very reassuring when your visionary CEO ends his big pitch on a reboot with, you guys got anything? I got communities and conversations. That's it. If anybody's got anything more specific, I'm all ears.
Well, that's like everyone forgets the line after this is a day that will live in infamy. And, you know, if anyone has any ideas of, you know, what that means, both for us as a community and militarily, you know, let me know.
We're trying to have new conversations here. I like what he said at the beginning of the video where he was just like, look, I think when I talk to the team, I think we realized that like Ozzy's back, but it's got to be different from the old Ozzy. So we got
to
like,
I mean, it actually
gotta,
has to be a change company things up. And not just a giant fucking Ozzy scheme.
Yeah,
where guys use fake voices to scam investment banks into giving them money.
Yeah, we're going to need a new strategy now that defrauding investors is out. So, conversations?
Cubes?
Cubes? Cubes, anyone?
That's a great, that is a great thing, because that video, because every single thing he says is what you say while you're panicking and trying to think of something to say. Like, it is just filler for the entire thing. He never got past the vamp until something comes up, and it never did. The thing that came up was, "What do you got?"
Like,
I want to. I
imagine
want to make
right before, right before he started filming that video. Just imagine someone asked him, "Sir, have you been drinking tonight?"
Yeah, I was going to say that I want to make that speech at my abduction trial.
Look, we're uplifting voices and building a community. We're all living in a community. We're here together in Guyana in a community. We're gonna take this juice together. Mother, please.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was thinking. That it sounds like he's describing Nexium.
Yeah, we're all getting tattoos, or at least the ladies are.
Yeah, all these things. They're all going. We were talking about how the Cube guys are reinventing Islam. Like, Carlos Watts is clearly like 2/3 of the way to a cult compound that burns down. We're now at the metaphysical level of the Silicon Valley economy, and I'm here for it.
Well, yeah, he said, like, you know, whatever Ozzy is in the future, and then he said, be it information, entertainment, or gatherings. So there we go. The Cube compound, I think, is a very that's a very potentially dynamic pivot for this company.
Yeah.
Well, I guess by default, Ozzy Fest was the most successful thing they ever did.
I mean, there were more people there than there should have been. That's for sure.
Yeah, there was the two of us was too many already.
How many people were there? Like, it wasn't like packed.
It was
right?
A decent. It was, like, no, it was packed.
It was pretty packed.
Say. It wasn't that. It wasn't a lot of space, though.
It wasn't like that. Yeah, it wasn't like it wasn't like on like the Sheep's Meadow.
It was like
something.
A very narrow
it was
little
the bandstand.
Area. So it's like,
but like, you know, in the standing room area, like there was probably like at least a couple thousand people there.
Okay, so that's more people saw Ozzy Fest in person than ever watched a video.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
They should just become concert promoters. Like, they should just take it on the road, like the like fish.
Oh yeah, they should be Rolling Loud for Clintonism.
Yeah, you got to be like, look, I'm timing this Molly so that I peaks when Erskine Bowles comes on stage.
Dude, Alan K. Simpson was lit last night. He's good in New York. Dude, did you see when Powell brought up Bernanke? Because I think he could still, like, Watson could still, like, get all these losers.
Yeah.
They don't, like, somehow these are always the last to find out that something they're involved
in. It's true.
In
yeah.
Scam.
They just go where their assistants tell them to go.
He could bring his VP on stage, and he could do, like, you know, sort of impressions, like a stand-up act. He's like, here's my impression of Goldman Sachs investor so-and-so. So, yeah, best of luck to Ozzy. Carlos, if you're there, I mean, we're available.
One word, buddy, Cubes. If you're clearly looking for ideas, and that's really, it seems to be the one that's most of the moment.
We're pivoting to Cubes.
I would like happily open for somebody at Ozzy Fest.
Absolutely. I would.
I mean, there's a track record of people showing up. Like, yeah, no, I would help out. If that's what he wants to do, if he wants to make it a physical thing, if when he said a physical community, if what he meant was not to do Nexium and brand Ozzy information slaves, and he just meant doing Ozzy Fest, absolutely.
In the Cube.
Give us a call.
That would be the bit, is that it'll be in a giant cube that travels from town to town, and then everybody gets inside to see the disruption and the thinkfluencing.
You know, it's not so much about the quality of information as it is about the density of information. And I think that's what we're learning about today's media community environment.
That's true.
Well, there we go, fellas. Cube it up.
Keep watching the cubes.
Before we sign off, we should say we still have tickets on sale for our Buffalo show. I believe by the time this episode goes out, the Warsaw show in Brooklyn will already be sold out.
Right.
So thank you all for who are ready to show up for that. That's going to be great. But Buffalo, 12-8, Wednesday, the 8th of December, Buffalo at Asbury Hall. I'm betting there'll still be tickets on sale for that. So link in bio.
Bye-bye.
Till next time, gentlemen.
Till next time.
Bye.